Happy opening day and welcome to the Journal Sentinel's inaugural Milwaukee Brewers podcast. I'm your host, Matt Velasquez, and I'm here with beat reporters Tom Hodricor and Todd Rosiak, who are fresh off covering spring training. So guys, are you ready for the regular season to get going?
Well, Matt, before Todd and I get ready for the regular season, we have to reacquaint ourselves with our homes, our beds, our significant others, and with me, a new puppy. I mean, we don't really have much choice but to hit the ground with our feet running. We got home late Wednesday night, actually Thursday morning at about 2:30 a.m. with a delayed flight, of all things, after 6.5 weeks in spring training. We got a delayed flight getting out of there. So people always tell us how lucky we are to be in Arizona, and that's certainly true, but I don't think anybody likes being away from home for 6.5 weeks. So I think I speak for us both when I say, here we go. We're getting ready to start, and it is good to be home.
Tom, with any luck, tomorrow they will cater in Boston Market for our pregame meal, and we can ring in the season in style. And that's for those of you, I'm sure everybody follows Tom's tweets, but it's been kind of an inside joke with ourselves and a few other media members in Maryvale. Almost every media meal we ate this spring was provided by Boston Market. So we've got literally turkey and ham and mashed potatoes and cream spinach coming out of our ears. And I think I can speak for Tom in saying I think we'll be fine if we never eat another meal from there again, even though it is good food. But, you know, you eat something every single day, literally, for weeks at a time, you're going to get sick of it. So that's my two cents.
Yeah,
although I would like to try that experiment with Chick-fil-A every day next year.
Well, you might not make it till next year then.
I think that's an experiment worth trying. I think if you're gonna go, I mean that's one way to do it. You know, but we'll get to more of some of the nuances of covering spring training a little bit later. But you know, first let's start with the actual baseball on the field and the players. And you know, Tom, maybe you can start with just the one thing that stood out to you most about covering the Brewers in spring training, and you know, what storyline you were most interested in while you were down there in Arizona.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things, and Craig Counsell, the manager, talked about this a lot, was a lot of the prospects came over this spring, more than we've ever seen play in the A games, the big league games. And one of the reasons is that they have more prospects than they've had, I think, ever, as far as total depth in their farm system. But and they wanted to see some of them. But some of them, like Lucas Erceg and Eason Diaz, were playing in Appleton last year. So these guys are jumping from low A ball to playing in big league games. I know they're exhibition games, but they're still playing against major league players. And they acquitted themselves quite well. And it was very impressive to watch. And so I just think we got a glimpse into the future in the spring. And any Brewers fans who got that same glimpse have to be encouraged by what they saw.
Hey, I'm supposed to be the minor league guy here, right? You stole my thunder. Thanks.
What new? I mean, welcome to our
right? I'm used to it. But, I mean, just to kind of riff off of that a little bit, I would agree that was very interesting. I was as curious as anybody to see some of these guys come up. And, you talk about some of the younger guys like Erceg and Diaz. I was very interested to see guys who were kind of further along, the Brinsons and the Cordells of the world, and Brett Phillips too, who missed pretty much all of last spring training with that oblique injury. And you certainly can see with those guys what all the buzz is about, especially Brinson. I mean, he's truly a physical specimen. He had a good spring in the time that he was with the big league club. And, you can see that he's definitely going to be on the fast track for the big leagues. The question becomes then, of course, where does he play? Injuries can play a role in that, et cetera. That stuff always has a way of shaking out. The other thing I always enjoy in spring is the storyline of, like, who emerges. Who's, like, the unexpected guy that just tears up camp and all of a sudden makes the opening day roster. And this year it's Jesus Aguilar who, as Tom was jokingly calling him, Babe Aguilar. He had like 11,900 to steal one of Tom's phrases and just was crushing the ball from start to finish. Now the question becomes, you know, can he do that with irregular playing time once the regular season starts? He's a very inexperienced major league player. I think he has like 35 major league at bats under his belt. But it was fun to watch a guy like that really slug his way onto the team. Now, the question becomes, does he wind up being a player who really can impact the roster moving forward as a pinch hitter slash, you know, not a platoon guy, but a guy that's going to play at first base maybe once a week or something like that? Or does he turn into a, you know, an Eric Almonte, a guy who just crushed it in spring training several years ago, and then, you know, after a couple weeks, you never heard from him again? So to me, that's always kind of one of the fun storylines to follow heading into spring training.
You know, and that kind of spins perfectly into where I wanted to go next, which is kind of just projecting and making sense of what the Brewers are going to be and all the different kind of positional battles and kind of question marks that we have going into the season. You know, obviously their bullpen is something that as recently as, you know, Saturday was providing like headline news and questions and issues with Tyler Cravey and, you know, kind of just the signing of Jared Hughes. You know, Tom, can you kind of take us through kind of what you expect for the bullpen and how all that shook out and whether or not you were surprised by the way that kind of was handled?
Well, much like the roads from Milwaukee to Chicago, bullpens are usually under construction all of the time. And so it's not uncommon to see players come and go. That's just the way it happens. Think about what's happened to the Brewers bullpen since last season. They traded away Will Smith, their left-handed setup man, and Jeremy Jeffress, their closer. Then when Tyler Thornburg became the closer, they later traded him away. So they had some significant retooling to do at the back end of their bullpen. And anybody who watched the World Series between the Indians and the Cubs knows that it's become a bullpen game. I don't think there's any coincidence that the teams that got Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman played for the big trophy. And it is a, you know, the Brewers had zero complete games last year, Matt. I'm not sure how many people realize that. And they've had about one or two in the last 4 years. So, you know, the old Brewers, Mike Colo used to have, you know, 30 complete games a year by himself. So you do need your bullpen. And the Brewers signed Neftali Feliz to be their closer. He's the former closer in Texas, but he was a setup guy in Pittsburgh last year. And then here at the last minute, they picked up Jared Hughes from Pittsburgh. Ironically, Hughes and Feliz pitched together in the Pittsburgh bullpen last year, so they've been reunited. But you have all the other guys, except for Carlos Torres, are young players just getting going. Corey Knebel and Jacob Barnes, people like that. And so Taylor Youngman is a starter that's going to be asked to relieve. So who knows how it's going to shake out. But one thing we know is bullpens change a lot. Ariel Pena gave up three home runs in one inning on opening day last year, was cut the next day, and we never saw him again. So that's how fast things can change.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. You know, that bullpen is going to be something I'm sure we'll talk about at multiple times this season. You know, but we're also probably going to spend a decent amount of time talking about the catching situation with Manny Pena and Jet Bandy and how they're going to be kind of figuring out how Craig Counsell is going to have to juggle that situation. I mean, where's that heading?
You want me to grab this one? I can jump in.
Go right ahead, Todd.
It sounds from what Craig Counsell said, there really isn't a set plan per se. It's not going to be like the timeshare like Jonathan Lucroy and Martin Maldonado had in previous years, where, you know, Lucroy was the clear starter and would play every four out of every 5 days. You know, this is going to be a case where, you know, maybe the hot guy gets the majority of the playing time, and then, you know, he cools off, the other guy gets going, then he plays for a while. So I would definitely say coming out of spring training, Manny Pena is the guy who's swinging the hottest bat. You know, he was next to Babe Aguilar, was probably the Brewers' best and most consistent hitter this spring overall from start to finish. So, you know, you would think that you'd want to give him the opportunity to continue to swing it well. And the other thing he has going in his favor is the fact that he's got experience, albeit limited, experience with the pitching staff, you know, the starting rotation, and then several of the relievers who were around last year. You know, Pena got called up at the trade deadline when Jonathan Lucroy was traded, and at least had that amount of time, roughly 2 months, to kind of get acquainted with the pitching staff and with the coaching staff and everything. So you've got to think there's a probably a little bit more of a comfort level with him in the game. But you know, that being said, Bandy's younger. I know the Brewers project him as you know, potentially being a pretty decent power hitter. He's got a very good throwing arm. Cuts a little bit different figure behind the plate in that he's very big and tall. I'll be interested to see, you know, what kind of target he presents, you know, how compact he can get, how low he can get to the ground, et cetera. You know, that kind of stuff is interesting to watch. But, you know, it's again, one of those positions and one of those battles that, if you want to call it a battle, that's going to kind of play itself out, I think, over the course of the next few months and maybe the whole season. Maybe it's a timeshare the whole season.
And we can't, and guys, we can't underplay how different an era this is for the Brewers and their catching. They had probably the most stable catching situation in the major leagues the last 4 or 5 years with Jonathan Lucroy, a two-time All-Star, as their number one catcher, and Martin Maldonado as their backup catcher, who is very proficient defensively. There's not many teams that even go 1 year or 2 years with the same two catchers. It's a very hazardous position. We saw Rene Garcia, Brewers minor league catcher, get plowed at the plate Saturday in their final exhibition game and end up in the hospital. Thank goodness he's only got a concussion. It looked a lot worse. So they went for this incredibly stable catching environment where the pitchers always knew who they were going to be throwing the ball to a totally different thing. And this was supposed to be a three-man competition. You know, Andrew Susak had a trapezius issue at the end of camp and is opening on the DL. So it didn't even – spring training didn't even play out like we thought. We thought it was going to be 3-2 and ended up being 2-2. So – we just cannot underplay how different it is for the Brewers right now behind the plate.
Tom, well, did you say that Susak was injured playing on a trapezius?
Yeah, I think he was in the part of the Great Walendas, you know, walking the tight wire. Yeah, I never have to worry about having a tight trapezius because I don't think I have one. My shoulders come straight out from my neck. I don't have that angle that athletes have.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're speaking for all of us here. But, you know, obviously, you know, the bullpen and kind of, you know, their battery mates, the catchers, those are two major issues that the Brewers will have to work through. But with the way their team's set up, I mean, there are question marks at virtually every position, storylines that we're going to be following up on and, you know, questions to be asked and things to kind of figure out, you know, with the way that they're rebuilding. You know, I guess, Todd, this time I'll start with you. You know, what are kind of, you know, two or three of the storylines that you're going to kind of be interested in to see how they play out, either individual, you know, performances or individual guys at their positions, or, you know, just as the team unfolds as a whole?
I guess a kind of a big picture thing is, you know, Craig Counsell talked a lot in the spring about, you know, guys making that next step, and I know Tom wrote about that already. It's a very interesting topic. You know, these guys who kind of got themselves on the radar screen last year, you know, like Jonathan Villar, to a lesser extent, Keon Broxton. I would include Domingo Santana in that group. Young, talented guys who obviously have potential. And for the Brewers to make that next step forward in their rebuild, they're obviously looking for players like these to make that next step. And you know, if you look at each one of those guys that I just mentioned, you know, Jonathan Villar, obviously he's switching positions, going from shortstop to second base. You know, I would think that he should fare well defensively over there. He told us last week that, you know, he thinks, or was it earlier this week, actually? Yeah, earlier this week that, you know, he thinks he could win a gold glove there. And, you know, who knows? Obviously he had a tremendous offensive year last year. The question with him, I think, becomes, can he learn from his mistakes? You know, obviously his base running gaffes were well publicized last year, and some of them rightfully so. You know, does he learn from that those mistakes and stop trying to steal third base in bad situations and, you know, with two outs and getting nailed for the third out with the Brewers trailing by one, those sorts of things. So that's something to watch. You know, Broxton, obviously, he was up and down four times. He figured it out that last time and really showed improvement from the start of the year to the end of the year that even Craig Counsell said was like almost unprecedented. You saw a guy that almost looked like he didn't even belong in minor league baseball because he just couldn't hit, to all of a sudden looking like, hey, this guy could be a future keeper. He's obviously a dynamic athlete, very good fielder. Can he carry over that end to his season to this year and do that for an entire year? A guy like Domingo Santana, you know, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy enough to get out there and play, a stretch, even three, four months where, you get a really good look at him. You know, the Brewers, I think, are very interested in seeing, can he stay healthy and can he produce in right field? Because, if he can't, then you've obviously got options in the minor leagues now, one of those guys being Lewis Brinson. So those are three names, and I think you could even throw Hernán Pérez in that mix too, who I think is a super intriguing player just because he's so versatile, can do so many things well. He hit really well last year. I don't think anybody expected him to steal 30-plus bases. Very good defender at many positions. If he can improve his plate discipline, draw a few more walks, get that on-base percentage up a little bit, there's a guy that, to me, is another great story. Didn't even make the opening day roster a year ago, and now he's one of their most indispensable players. I believe I had him ranked sixth on their 25-man roster in terms of importance to the team. So, that just kind of a big picture glance, though, that's what I would say is really worth watching, at least in the early going.
All right, so Tom, Todd took a couple outfielders and then VR as guys he's watching and storylines to follow. What's your take on the Brewers this year and the storylines you're most interested in?
Well, a lot of it, and Todd mentioned VR. A lot of it, centers in their infield. Eric Thames had fantasy league numbers for 3 years in Korea. Well, how's that going to translate to the big leagues? We don't know yet. He admits that they didn't really throw hard over there, and that baseball was a lot different. Then you have Orlando Arcia, the Brewers' former number one prospect, came up for 2 months last year and underachieved offensively. So is he going to be able to live up to the potential, especially at the plate? We see he can play in the field. He's a very good shortstop. But will he live up to his potential offensively? We don't know yet. And then at third base, Travis Shaw, I think he's going to be the cleanup hitter a lot this year. He had a really good, 4 months last year with Boston and then slid at the end. So there's a lot of the Brewers' success or lack thereof this year is going to come, at least offensively, out of the infield. I think we know Ryan Braun's going to hit in left. Looks like Keon Broxton's a breakthrough type guy in center. And as Todd just mentioned, if Santana stays healthy, they think he'll do something at the plate. So I just kind of have my eye on what's going to go on in the infield there. And, as Todd said, I wrote my column in the opening day, in our opening day section in the Sunday paper, just about how impossible it is to predict what their record might be this year. And a lot of people thought I was covering my butt for my prediction that I made in that same section. and we always hope no one writes those downs, because none of us are ever right. But it's impossible to know what this team's going to do, because they got so many sophomores. And will these guys have sophomore slumps, or will they excel in their second time around? And there's just no way to know. Anybody who says, I definitely know how many games the Brewers are going to win this year or can be close to it, that's nonsense. So there's no crystal ball that good.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to those predictions. I mean, you're talking to a guy who puts his bracket in the Journal Sentinel every year, and this year I got nobody in the Final Four, and my 3-year-old got one. She got Oregon. So, I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to predictions. But Tom, you mentioned Ryan Braun. What is his role as kind of the last man, left standing as part of this rebuild? He's the only guy left that's been on the Brewers for any amount of time.
He is. So they're counting on him to be a stabilizing force both on and off the field. He played very well last year offensively for a guy coming off back surgery and a guy whose thumb was barking so bad a couple of years ago he couldn't even grip the bat. They wisely gave him time off throughout the season, and he only played in 135 games, but he was at full strength for those 135 games instead of being at 80% for maybe 150 games. So they're just going to count on him. You know, if they would have traded him last August 1st, and they came very close in talks with the Dodgers to trade him, if they would have traded him last August 1st, not only would they have lost a lot more games last season, you'd have to downgrade him for this year until they got some guys some experience, because he's the one guy that you know, like you said, the last man standing. I have a story in the Monday morning paper, a little tease, on how he's had the perfect view of the rebuild, because he's the only position player who's seen the whole thing. All the rest of them got traded. Scooter Gennett got claimed on waivers last week by the Reds. And he had been the second highest tenured position player on the team with about 3 years behind Braun. Now it drops in position players from Braun to Hernan Perez and Domingo Santana, who both joined the team in 2015. I mean, can you speak to a bigger turnover than that?
I can't. I definitely can't. But that's a huge turnover, and it's something that, you know, you have to expect as part of a rebuild. It doesn't make it any fun. You know, it doesn't make it any more enjoyable, but it's something that you have to deal with, and, you know, it kind of speaks to, you know, partially, obviously, if they gotten the right deal, they would have traded Braun, you know, but it speaks to, you know, kind of the value of having someone still there who has that experience and, you know, who can kind of have that kind of air about him in the clubhouse and all that.
Yes. It does. And so, you know, let's see if he does end his career with the Brewers. He does become a 10-5 player on May 24th. 10-5 meaning at least 10 years in the majors and at least 5 years with your current club. That gives you full veto rights over any trade.
Definitely important date to look out for then. You know, so as you mentioned, you know, the predictions, we're glad that people don't necessarily write them down, but, you know, this is the time of year for predictions. This is the time of year to kind of talk about what we might expect for the year. So let's kind of go big picture. I know you guys in the, you know, the opening day special section we had in the Journal Sentinel put out your projections for, you know, who you thought would win each division and then how you thought the playoffs would go and who would win the World Series. So let's start with Todd. You know, why don't you give us the rundown of who you liked and kind of give us a little bit of an explanation as to why.
Well, I just want to preface this by saying Tom and I last week in Arizona, we were I read off our predictions from last year, and we all had a good laugh over how, you know, our predictions compared to what actually happened. I think we both had the Cubs going far, if not the World Series, but other than that, we were woefully off. So that's not to say that we will be that bad this year. Who knows? But I mean, I'll just go down my list that I have here. You know, what I had in the section. Had the Cubs winning the NL Central. I mean, that to me is a no-brainer. The Nationals winning the NL East. I just think the combination of their pitching and some of the position players they have, led by Bryce Harper, makes them the favorite. Dodgers winning the NL West. Again, you know, you've got a big group of star players there, and if they stay healthy, you figure they're going to win out. Wild cards, I had the Mets and the Giants, and both of those teams powered by their pitching, obviously. Giants, I know, fell a little bit short today with that closer they signed, Melanson, had a rough day of it on opening day, but you figure he's going to be good. And obviously, any staff with Mad Bum and Cueto is going to compete. I've got the wild card winner being the Mets. The NLDS winners, Cubs and Nationals, and the Cubs winning the National League. American League, I'm going to go repeat with the Indians. In the AL East, I've got the Red Sox. AL West, I've got the Rangers. So, again, just teams that have a ton of star power and talent, both on their pitching staffs and position player-wise. Wild cards, I'm going Blue Jays, even though they did suffer a big loss with Edwin Encarnacion going to the Indians. I've got the Astros in there. They had a little bit of a downer year last year. I feel like they're going to bounce back. I've got the Blue Jays winning the wild card game. ALDS winners, Red Sox and Indians, and I have the Red Sox actually winning this time. And then the Cubs winning it all. I don't think anybody thinks that's going out on a limb there. So that's, I don't think I even have to explain that one. And then finally the Brewers record, I have them at 74-88. So I've got them a win more than last year. I think that's reasonable. I think that's achievable. And again, you have to kind of couch that by saying, you know, should the Brewers trade Ryan Braun? Should Ryan Braun be hurt for any lengthy amount of time? Any other of those key guys go down with injuries? Obviously, that record could drop quite a bit. If everybody stays healthy, those guys that I talked about earlier taking that next step, the VRs and the Domingo Santanas and the Broxtons of the world, I wouldn't be surprised to see them win a few more games than that. So, but I think 74 wins is realistic and is probably what you could expect out of a rebuilding group with this amount of talent in year two.
All right, and Tom, you've had some similar picks, but not exactly the same. Why don't you give us your rundown and your thoughts behind your projections for the way baseball will go in your world this year?
Well, to show how memorable my picks were, and they just were published today, while Todd was giving his picks, I went and grabbed the special section to remind myself who I had picked.
Well, I didn't remember mine either. Trust me, I had to look it up. I was prepared. I had it up on my screen. So I think all I would really remember would have been the Cubs winning it all and the Brewers record. So
exactly.
So, some really strong takes there. Just really, really strong.
Yeah. Well, I do. I have the Cubs winning it all again. And I don't think any National League team has won the World Series back-to-back year since the Cardinals in, what, the 40s or something. I don't know. It just doesn't happen. And no team's done it, period, since the Yankees, you know, back in the late 1990s when they were awesome and winning it every year before Arizona finally ended their run in 2001. So just picking the Cubs, history tells you it's not going to happen. But, I mean, they're so much better than everybody else. It's just the one thing I will say is their pitching, their starting pitching is a little older now, and they didn't have any injuries in their pitching last year, and it only takes a little bit there to really change the course of your season. You know, they also don't have Aroldis Chapman, who they picked up at the break last year and led them to the World Series. So I don't know if they're going to do it again, but they're just so much better than everybody else. If anybody's going to unseat them, it might be the Dodgers. I have them picking winning the West. I have the Nationals winning the East, but they just always let you down at the end. So I don't feel that strong about them. I have the Giants and the Mets as the wild card winners. And like Todd said, right, you know, apparently the Giants closer's position is so irrevocably broken that it doesn't matter who you put into it, he stinks, because Mark Melancon comes in there and immediately pukes one up to the Diamondbacks in Arizona today. So it's like if you're the Giants closer, you're not going to be very good no matter who you are. And but I still, you know, I still like them. The Mets, their starting pitching is so good if they stay healthy. I've got them as another wild card winner. So I have the Giants winning the wild card. I have the Cubs and Dodgers winning the NLDS. I have the Cubs winning the pennant. Then I have them facing the Astros.
That's something different.
I went a little nutty there. The Indians probably have the best team. But what's the odds of the same two teams making it to the World Series?
This isn't the NBA.
Good point. And so I just wanted somebody different. I had to like stretch my brain a little bit to get them to the World Series. But, you know, I like the Blue Jays and the Rangers to make the postseason as well. The Red Sox, although with David Price, if his elbow doesn't come around, that's really going to hurt them. The Indians are really good though. They are really good. And picking up Encarnacion only helps them. And so, it would be flabbergasting to me if the Cubs and the Indians play again for the World Series. Maybe that would be karma, and then the Indians would win and put their long, over out of misery too. So we knew somebody was going to win last year that hadn't won for a long time, but it was the team that hadn't won for the longest time. But, you know, the Indians have been trying to win the World Series for a long time as well. Matt, we were pulling for the Indians to win the World Series from a statistical viewpoint, a lot of us, because see if you can wrap your brain around this. If the Indians would have won the World Series last fall, the Indians and the Cleveland Cavaliers would have each won a world title since the last time the Cleveland Browns won a game.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
I think they were 0-11 at the time the World Series was going on.
What in the world?
So you live for statistical oddities like that, but it didn't happen.
Well,
speaking of oddities, I was just perusing the Brewers' opening day roster, and in a very newsy item, the Brewers have added a second bullpen catcher this year by the name of Robin Zon Diaz, Z-O-N, and he does have a little bit of major league experience. He was in camp with the Brewers several springs, I believe, a few years back. But I saw his jersey number is 63 this year. And I, Tom, I know you're not great with numbers, but I'm going to give you the opportunity. I want you to guess the last player to wear number 63 on the Brewers. And it happened in a regular season. Oh. Like, I mean, it was worn by several games in a regular season.
Oh man, I'm so bad at
that.
Yeah, I'm so bad at that number game. People ask me all the time, well, what numbers the player wear and what their walk-up song is, and I draw blanks every time because I just don't think in those terms. So I'm not going to embarrass myself. Who was it?
All right. Well, I'll even call myself out in this one. I thought I was certain that I was right, and I actually was wrong, but by a year. So my guess. I was certain that Frankie De La Cruz was the last guy to wear it. Now, he did wear it in 2011, but Tyler Thornburg actually wore 63 in 2012 and 2013, which surprised me. I did not remember that. So, and there's actually two other guys in Brewers history who have worn 63 in the regular season, and I'm sure these are very memorable names to you, Tom. You covered them both. Brad Woodall in 1998. And Jay Aldrich in 1987. So there you go, a little nugget from TR here on the podcast.
Well, Jay Aldrich is memorable for a crazy question that was asked about him in the postgame. We won't bother to tell that in the podcast. But Brad Woodall, are you making that up?
Serious.
I covered him?
I think you did. I don't really have much memory of him. Let's see. He was a left-handed pitcher, and he he was 7-9 with a 4.96 ERA, 31 games, 20 started for the Brewers in 98. So there you go.
Well, I remember who Lacey Underall is, but not Brad Woodall. So
are you serious?
Hey, here's another stat, a prediction I'm going to make about Robinson Diaz. He's going to catch more home games this year than any other catcher in baseball. Tell him why, Todd.
Well, he's now the ceremonial first pitch catcher, so he'll be swiping the 10 bouncers and the hoppers and the dribblers and the worm burners thrown by the CEOs of Milwaukee and the award winners and the coaches of the high school baseball teams at Wynn State and those kind of things. So he'll definitely get his fair share of action. It just will be, it will be coming before the game actually starts. So
now who's in charge of keeping his stats and making sure that everybody keeps him honest?
Well, you can't give him a pass ball, but he's going to see many wild pitches.
Yes. It'll be interesting to see who catches opening day, because I don't want to say that gentleman throwing the first pitch will throw a wild pitch, but we'll see.
But see, like, yeah. Who knows who'll be his catcher? I got to find somebody of a higher ranking than Robinson Diaz.
Maybe Trent Council. The manager will do that occasionally. I think we stand a pretty good chance of him going out there and doing it.
Yep, I think you're right.
I can't wait to find out. I really can't. But this all transitions very well, just kind of into, you know, a regular topic that we want to discuss on the podcast, which is kind of just the life of being a baseball writer and what it means and what it takes and what kind of the little nuances and things are. So, you know, you guys alluded to it earlier in the, you know, not really being home for 6 weeks and eating Boston Market every day and kind of living that life. you know, kind of give us some more examples of kind of what it's like on a day-to-day basis of covering spring training, and kind of how do you manage your time, and what do you do, and kind of all that stuff. I'm really interested to find out.
I don't want to give up the idea, but I guess I am. I think this would make for a thrilling reality show. They should put a camera in our condo for 6 weeks and just see how glamorous it is, our lives that we lead covering spring training, because let me tell you, it's amazing. But you know, that of course is a joke. It's very tough living away from home for that amount of time, and I know that people do it for much longer periods of time and under much worse circumstances, you know, namely our servicemen and women around the world. So trust me, this is no great sacrifice that we're making here, but you know, it being away from home and being away from your family and your loved ones and your friends and your pets and whatever else you have, it's tough to do. The thing that made it nice this year, we had a very nice place to stay, a very nice condominium, and in a nice area in the Biltmore area in Phoenix. So when you have a really nice home base to call home for that amount of time, it makes a huge amount of difference. And obviously, you know, getting along with your coworker is a big thing. And Tom, I think, you know, Tom would agree that we get along well and we kind of play well off of each other. So it kind of becomes almost, you know, like a, I don't want to say like a high school type deal, but like, you know, it's kind of fun. I mean, you're away and you're, you know, we're doing baseball pretty much 24/7, and you know, we're able to, you know, the little downtime that we have, you know, Monday and Tuesday nights, we'd watch WWE Raw, WWE SmackDown. You know, we get together with some of our people down there that we know, some of the Brewers personnel and whatnot that had similar interests. And so you kind of, it's
Todd, go ahead. Tell them how much I like all the talking on the WWE.
Yeah. Tom's not a big, fan of all the promos, and especially, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman. I am the advocate for the beast incarnate, Brock Lesnar. Tom's head would spin off his shoulders every time that guy would pop up on the screen. But
I call him, I call him Alfred, because the guy looks like Alfred Hitchcock. He's a spitting image of Al Paul. He's a spitting image. I expect a bunch of birds to start flying out of the screen every time.
But you know, that, I mean, it may, you know, of course, you know, wrestling is what it is, and you know, some people don't like it. I get it. But the point of the discussion here is that, you know, we're working long days. You know, just to give you an idea, we're out the door 7:30 every morning, and you know, at the ballpark all day. We're generally getting home between 5:30 and 6 every night, and fighting brutal traffic both ways, you know, morning rush hour, evening rush hour, and a lot of baseball in between. So when you get that downtime, it's crucial to kind of take advantage of it and you know, try to relax a little bit. And I'm fortunate enough to, you know, have a group of people down there that likes to go hiking and stuff, so I get out there and definitely enjoy the trails. And you know, we did Camelback, we did Squaw Peak this year several times, and those few off days are really nice. We do have work to do on those, but by and large, they're, you know, kind of our days to unwind and relax a little bit. So that's important too. So Tom, I'll let you go. I'm kind of rambling on here. If you want to pick up on anything that I missed or riff off of anything that I said, feel free.
Well, I think the most interesting thing about spring training for us is that, to borrow a phrase from Forrest Gump, our spring training condos are kind of like a box of chocolates. You never know what's going to be in there. Didn't Forrest Gump say that?
Just about. Yeah, you're pretty close.
Yeah, but because we bounce around and we you know, book these things online, and we try to be financially
responsible,
and so we never actually know what we're getting until we get down there, because we never have the same one 2 years in a row. And I would just like to mention, we had an all-timer 3 years ago, or was it 2 years ago, north of Maryville, Todd? We were north of Maryville.
That was 2 years ago, 2015. Right. We were in Glendale there.
Here's what made that condo interesting, Matt. These are supposed to be furnished condos. The owner of the condo and the realtor representing that condo did not believe trash cans were part of a furnished apartment. Lighting in my bedroom, there was no lights. The cookware had crusted old food in it and was only about three pots in there anyway. So what they called a furnished condo, Sasquatch would have complained about. So you just never know. But
the air conditioning broke three times. The plumber had to come once. So our experiences are definitely colored by where we live. You know, I mean, when you're working, you know, 10-hour days, you're looking forward to being able to come back to a comfortable place and have a comfortable bed and a place where you can rely on the air conditioning. And when you can't even rely on that and you don't get any response from the landlord and the realtor, then it becomes 10 times more stressful than it is anyway. So,
Well, I'm sure Tom loves that just as much as he loves getting delayed flights on his way home from spring training.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And this definitely goes under the category too much information. But in most of the condos we've had in spring training, the toilets have been Eddie Goodell sized type.
and let's keep in mind that I'm like what 4 or 5 inches taller than Tom too.
And I'm 6 feet one, you know. So we are not short people, but the toilets are just kind of low. We'll just leave it at that.
I think we should. You know, so obviously, you know, spring training has its pratfalls and things like that. You know, what are some of the, you know, when I say what's the difference between covering spring training versus, you know, covering the regular season, what jumps out in your head?
Well, we get to go in the clubhouse after the starting pitcher leaves the game. What happens in spring training, especially early in camp when those starters are not going that deep in the games? Because the starting pitcher and the starting players, when they come out of the games, dress and go home, we get to go into the clubhouse and talk to them. Something you would never do in the regular season. You would never have clubhouse access till after the game. So we quite often miss like the third, fourth, and fifth innings of games because we're down in the clubhouse talking to the guys who came out of the game. And so people say, well, how come you didn't tweet that, you know, grand slam home run by, Jesus Aguilar? Well, we didn't see it, you know. And sometimes we'll come back out of there and we'll see some crooked numbers up on the scoreboard, and we won't have any idea how it happened, how all of those runs got on there. But if you don't go in and talk to those guys before they leave, you don't get to talk to them. So that to me is the biggest difference, is just clubhouse access happens during the game. It'd be like, Matt, can you imagine in the NBA, Matt, if you got to go in at halftime and talk to him?
I mean, I can't even imagine. We get to go in before the games, you know, as you guys do, you know, get to go into the clubhouse, but it's a totally different world.
Yeah, the thing I think is that is important too, and it kind of builds off of what Tom was saying, but is just building the relationships with guys during the spring in a very relaxed environment. And relaxed, I mean, comparing it to the regular season where every game counts. You know, you get a chance to meet these prospects like Lewis Brinson for the first time and, you know, renew acquaintances with guys like Josh Hader and Brett Phillips, who are, you know, projected to be, you know, pretty big contributors for the team down the line. And then, you know, you're getting to know guys, big leaguers who were added to the major league roster. And you're spending a lot of time. I mean, we're in the clubhouse in the mornings for an hour and a half every morning. And you can use that time as you see fit. I mean, there's always guys in there. They're always in and out doing things. And they're, by and large, they're available and open to talk. And a lot of them do like to talk. And, you know, is very important for me because Tom obviously has been doing this way longer, than I have. I mean, I think Tom invented baseball, actually, but be that as it may, 2011 was my first year covering the team, and I jumped in right at the start of the season. I was coming off the Marquette beat, and that year was obviously my last year covering Marquette. They made it to the Sweet 16, so I missed out on spring training, and I missed out on building those relationships, and it took me really until the end of the year to kind of catch up and, you know, to get that kind of familiarity with the players and to get them knowing me and my face and who I was. And, you know, you just, you're kind of building, you know, your credibility and your relationships when those guys see you in there every day. And, they get to know you and know the kind of questions you ask and what you're writing and everything. So that's a big deal too. You know, obviously we see these guys every day when we're at the ballpark during the regular season, but it's for a much, it's much less amount of time, and the schedule is much different. Guys are in and out. They've got things that they've got to do. They're on a very strict time schedule, and we are as well. So we're kind of in and out of there, but spring training is a good time to kind of, really linger around and just talk to guys and get to know them on a personal basis. And that eventually, if it, you know, it benefits you down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it definitely sounds like it's a different world. And from having, you know, gone to a couple Brewers games and covered a couple Brewers games with you guys, you know, it matters. You know, you can see the guys who were there at spring training covering the team and putting in the work, you know, versus the guys like me who are just showing up. Like, I don't know any of these guys. I don't know what I'm doing. They don't know me. And it definitely colors everything. So I could definitely see how that works. But we're going to try to make this a regular segment. You guys seem pretty forthcoming with information about, you know, kind of the behind the scenes of the beat. So we'll take some time over the course of the, you know, the episodes during the year to kind of ask about different stadiums you like or don't like, or places that serve only Boston market versus places that serve, you know, even worse food or better food. And, you know, we'll, and stories you hear in the clubhouse, I'm sure we'll hear some Euchre stories at some point, and, you know, we'll kind of get a good idea of what the beat is like and what it entails. But for now, I think that kind of wraps up the planned portion of the podcast, and we'll go to Twitter. I got a couple questions for you guys from Twitter, and we'll tackle those, and then we'll be out of here. So I guess the first question that we have on Twitter, looks like it comes from a guy by the name of Gymnastic. He says, if Thames struggles badly, how long before we see Aguilar or Shaw take over at first base? If Shaw, then Perez to third base? Question mark.
Yeah, I don't think the leash is going to be real short on Thames, because they signed him to a 3-year contract with a 4th-year option. So they're going to give the guy a chance to show what he could do. And, you know, it's probably going to be an adjustment period for him. And Shaw, you know, can play first base if they need to, but I think they want to keep him at third base for the most part. And then, you know, Thames, I think we'll see in the outfield a little bit too, because they do want to give Aguilar some starts at first base. But at least with Aguilar coming out of nowhere with a tremendous spring and forcing the Brewers to keep him, at least they do have an option if Thames needs to sit down for a while, if he's in a big slump or something like that, or if he has a, you know, a strained hamstring or something that keeps him out for a few days. So, but he's the first baseman until proven otherwise. And Craig Counsell, say what you want about his managerial style, but I do not think we can say he is an impatient manager. Do you, Todd?
No, not at all. And I think that it's very interesting, you know, that Aguilar has all of a sudden, you know, sparked this talk of, hey, you know, Thames can play some outfield. You know, obviously he came up as an outfielder in the earlier portion of his major league career. But there was like literally no talk of that, even early in spring training, about Thames potentially playing the outfield. We were just looking at him as the everyday de facto first baseman. And now, you know, Aguilar had such a great year, or such a great spring, plus the fact that he can only play first base, that now, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see Thames in the outfield 20 games or whatever, in one of the corner spots. So that's just kind of an interesting offshoot of the Jesus Aguilar effect from his crushing spring training.
All right, now we got a question from one of my Marquette followers, a person with the handle True Golden Eagles. It kind of covers something we already talked about, but what are your expectations from the Brewers' catcher position this year?
Well, you know, we did hit on that pretty good during the podcast, but I think my expectations are not to expect anything, and let's see what they do. Craig Counsell had a very telling comment the other day. He says, don't ask me what my pattern's going to be for how I split time with the two catchers, because I don't know what my pattern's going to be. He doesn't know himself. And so, you know, logic tells you that one guy will step forward and play more than the other guy, just get hot with the bat, and they'll have to put him behind there. But logic doesn't always win out in baseball. So to me, it's just a total open book on what might happen there.
Then you've got Andrew Susak in the minors as well at AAA, and he obviously was a piece to that Will Smith trade too. You know, it'll be interesting to see when he gets healthy what he does in Colorado Springs. You know, if he hits and plays the way you would expect him to at altitude and puts up some numbers, what if a guy like, you know, either Pena or Bandy struggles? Would you see the Brewers, you know, call him up and send another guy down? I know Pena doesn't have any options anymore, so that, you know, that would seem to leave Bandy in that boat. So that's just another thing to kind of think about. They've got, you know, they've got options there. They've got more than one guy, but there's no guarantee for many of them that they're going to be, you know, productive major league catchers. So it's just going to kind of be a wait and see thing.
Perfect. And then the last one, maybe the most important, we'll see, comes from Spencer Williams. He's a, you know, radio producer around town. I'm sure you guys will see him at some Brewers games. But he asks, what are your thoughts on WrestleMania?
Well, we're missing it because of this podcast. Nice scheduling, Matt.
Oh, gosh. Thanks.
Well, I don't subscribe to the network, so I'll just have to hear about it later. But I'll be interested to see who wins the matches because, as Todd mentioned, we watched a lot of Raw and SmackDown in spring training just because we didn't have anything to do on Monday and Tuesday nights. So at least we know how they set it up, don't we, Todd?
Yeah, we do. And the one thing I would say, honestly, I don't really care who wins or anything, but the one guy that we'll be rooting for, that I'm rooting for, is Braun Strowman. And I know people who follow us on Twitter, I'm sure, have seen the pictures and everything, but we were fortunate enough to get to know Braun when he was at a Brewer game last year. Just a quick backstory, his family is from the greater Milwaukee area. He was born and raised in North Carolina, but has an affinity for Wisconsin sports teams, especially the Brewers, and actually took his name Braun Strowman from Ryan Braun. It was his favorite. It's his favorite player. So he came to Miller Park last year for a game, and we were able to get to speak to him for a while and hang out a little bit. And he was good enough to invite us to the matches in November at the Bradley Center. So, you know, big fans of him, and I believe he's going to be coming back to town at some point this spring, and we'll see him at a Brewer game and get to renew our acquaintances with him. But it's been fun to watch a guy who's so genuine, down to earth, behind the scenes, but to see him as such a monster on TV and getting the big push that he's getting from the WWE. Obviously, we hope for bigger and better things for him moving forward. Maybe a world title. We'll see. So that's the one guy that I have my eyes on, and hopefully he does well tonight.
Well, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, Todd, but a little bird told me we're not going to like what happened with him tonight. Just a little bird.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Spoiler alert. You should have told me. Maybe I was going to go rent it. Thanks a lot. Once again, you're crushing my world. What new?
Exactly. I wouldn't have it any other way.
This is just like every day in spring training for 11-9 Springs.
Hey, can't you tell what a good mentor I'm being, Matt?
I think it's very apparent.
Thank you.
You know, but with that, I think we're out of questions. And so, you know, this first edition of the Eternal Sentinel Brewers podcast has come to a close. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. And you probably found this episode on JS Online, but sooner than later, we can only hope, you'll also be able to find us on iTunes and Stitcher, where you'll be able to subscribe so you never miss an episode. New episodes will be available at the start of every Brewers homestand, with the next one scheduled for April 20th. Until then, thanks for listening.